Phil Mason Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the full hour today, talking NBA playoff basketball. It's going to be a lot of fun. Later on, J.R. Wilco and I will talk about the 1-1 San Antonio Spurs. And J.A. Sherman, now, he isn't here yet. And Oklahoma City's playing right now, and I'm hoping that we'll be talking about the 2-1 Memphis Grizzlies. But up first, it seems that the only team that's able to hold serve at home are the Miami Heat. And joining me to talk all about that and more, please welcome from HotHotHoops.com, their lead writer, David Ramil, is in the house. David, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Phil. Glad to be here again.
It's great to have you here. We got such tremendous feedback, and I wanted to let you know that people loved listening to the Heat. The Heat have a lot of fans. A lot of them are new fans, really, because of, you know, LeBron or Chris Bosh. But they're still great fans, positive feedback, excellent stuff. And the Heat are 2-0. What do you make of all that? We didn't think it would be much of a series, but yowza.
Well, it's been a lot closer than we anticipated, and that's despite the injury to Al Jefferson. I mean, he's just been such a great player, despite the limited, you know, footwork because of the full the aggravation of his plantar fasciitis there. But I mean, he's such a great player, such a low down low, and he's really been challenging the Heat. I always thought it was going to be more important to let him get his points and then see if the supporting cast could come up big. And they've done a pretty good job so far. Game one was a little bit easier. Certainly in game two, we saw some really explosive athleticism from Kemba Walker and some key contributions from Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and others. So it's been a tighter series than I had anticipated.
It's much tighter than I thought, too. I didn't think Charlotte had a chance. And they're hanging in there. I'll tell you, though, the big story was Josh McRoberts' attempted decapitation of LeBron James. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, I know his comments after the game, he tried to explain himself that there was no intent, no malicious intent. It wasn't meant to be dirty. But, you know, it was such a hard blow. You know, you take it for granted with a player like LeBron James, who's so athletic, so strong. He takes those kind of hits fairly regularly. But this one came at such a sensitive area there, and it really jarred him pretty, you know, heavily there. He was trying to catch his breath, and I'm a little surprised at the officiating. They should have called it a flagrant two at the time. He probably should have been ejected at that point. And then for the NBA to review it later on and deem it just a regular foul, although they did fine him $20,000, that's not nearly enough. He probably should have been suspended, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they did upgrade it to a flagrant two.
Oh, did they? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I saw the fine. I thought without the suspension, he should have been suspended. I mean, there was no need for that. I know, again, when he said it wasn't intended, you know, it wasn't malicious, but it was a hard blow. There's no way in hell that just dropped his elbows into somebody's throat like that. So I'm a little concerned about it. I think the officiating has been a problem all playoffs long, and it's just manifested in this particular series now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to I saw this posting over on your website. Surya Fernandez posted that it was upgraded to a flagrant two, no suspension, and a $20,000 fine. And we want to send our best wishes out to my friend Surya. Get better soon, dude.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I got to mention him, man. Ever since I met him, he's been a big part of the show. He helps me out tremendously. He's a great guy, as are all your staff. Your fans are great, even though I'm a Knicks fan. It's a good thing.
We won't hold it against you.
We will try not to, and I try not to do that with you guys either. But but you brought up the officiating. Now, usually, as you know, I'm recording during these games, but I flip it over to one of the streams in between breaks, and I've watched probably, I guess, 10 complete games now. And this officiating, and I've talked about this with other guys, I wanted to ask you the same thing. It seems like they're trying to prevent things before they happen. And then in this case, though, it was the complete opposite. They did nothing. And I don't understand. There's no consistency here, and it should be consistent at least in the playoffs, right?
Well, I mean, LeBron is such an odd character in that he takes these kind of hard, you know, shots all the time. He doesn't really retaliate all too much. I can remember maybe once against the Brooklyn Nets earlier this season, and then at another point, I can't remember exactly when, where he kind of got, you know, got a hard hit on him, and then he kind of, you know, looked to start something. Maybe if he hadn't been as hurt as he was and he had immediately got up and tried to start a fight with McRoberts, maybe they would have been able to, you know, kind of placate the crowd and throw him out immediately or something like that. But, you know, it's just, it was really odd the way they just let it happen, and they just didn't call a flagrant on him. I mean, they didn't even bother reviewing it even under 2 minutes in the game. It was certainly reviewable. It seems like the very least they could have done was just take a look at the foul, see if there was intent there, and then follow the letter of the law, deem it a flagrant, and then immediately inject him. I mean, it should have been no sweat for them to do so.
Absolutely. It shouldn't have been, but they didn't. Fortunately, Rod Thorne and the rest of the NBA did the right thing and fined the guy at least. Should have been a suspension. You know, anytime you go above the shoulders, I don't care what Josh McRoberts said, and I'm not accusing him of anything, but even he knows. Had the shoe been on the other foot, he'd be screaming to the hills about this. And that's just unfortunate, because that was an incredible basketball game. And you mentioned Al Jefferson. Jeez, what a beast. He's a load, like you said, but you can see the pain. Plantar fasciitis is not a very good thing. And it's not fun. Or fasciitis. I can never pronounce that, David. I'm glad that you did it correctly the first time. I think I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah, plantar fasciitis. That's how I've always heard it pronounced. But yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, I think they mentioned during the first broadcast on Game 1 that the Bobcats hadn't had one game nationally broadcast all year long. So this is really their coming out party. And it's great to see. I mean, I know we're supposed to be, you know, concerned or maybe have some kind of level of hatred for our opponent. But I really respect the way they've played. They've been solid all year. I know people want to dismiss it because they're in a weak Eastern Conference, but they've been great defensively. And Jefferson is deserving of being an all-star. He should be on one of the all-NBA teams. He's been really solid. His footwork in the low post is incredible. He's got that old school kind of below the rim game, but he's just so effective down there. And he's got a surprisingly effective jump shot, too. He's actually been knocking down a couple of shots since he's been so limited with his footwork. But he's a great player, and, you know, I'm a little concerned. I think we've actually gotten a little bit lucky to have gone away with two wins so far. I think if he was at full strength, they might have taken at least one game from Miami at this point in the series.
You know, those are good points. I think, you know, I hope, I know he's not going to win, but I hope he at least gets a vote or two for MVP, because, you know, without him, the Bobcats go nowhere. And when they signed him, I thought, that's another one of Michael Jeffrey Jordan's deals, you know?
Right.
And it is what it is, but he's played well. They've played well. Now, I was listening to the Dan Le Batard show every day, and they were talking about resting Dwayne Wade because there's no point in playing him. Do you see any need for him to rest? Because I personally don't.
He was great in Game 1. I mean, he kind of, you know, made sure that we weren't fearful for any longer, because he was just so solid, so great. All of the skills that he's displayed throughout his career were on display there. So, I mean, he was just a great player. And then in Game 2, he kind of took a bit of a step back, but still very solid, very dependable. And I think, you know, we needed him out there. I think for Miami, in order to succeed and move on, they need him to be out there. At this point, I think it's still too early in the series. If we're up, you know, if we win the third game, and maybe there's a pretty substantial lead in the game in fourth game, maybe they sit him. But at this point, I think he needs to start. He needs to get his rhythm going. He needs to make the kind of pattern that he's gotten with LeBron James and Chris Bosh. And I think he needs to be out there. I don't see any point in having him sit.
I'll tell you what, big shot Bosh, 4 or 5 from three. He seems to make big shots every time they need him. And that's what an all-star does, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that three-point shot has been such a weapon, and it's very just impressive to see him out there. He's, you know, it started off a little bit sluggishly. I think he missed his first two shots, but then he just started connecting from everywhere. And when he starts getting that rhythm going, he's such a threat from outside. I mean, LeBron was looking for him pretty actively, and every time he was out there beyond the line, He just found a way to get him a bullet pass right in the hands, and he was able to knock it down with some effectiveness yesterday. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he can maintain that throughout the rest of the series.
Yeah, I think he will, probably. But the one thing that I've been impressed with is the way they're moving the ball. They seem to be moving the ball a little sharper than they were during the regular season, during the quote-unquote coasting season. Right. Have you noticed that, or did I miss something, or what?
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. They just, you know, everybody has dismissed what Miami has done for the past few years because they always just call it flipping the switch. But, you know, they realize where their bread is buttered. It's the playoffs. They need to be a little bit more intense, and they certainly ratcheted up that intensity, that energy level. And I think it shows on the offensive end where they're making that extra pass, trying to find the open man. And defensively, yesterday, I mean, that game, too, they were much more active than they'd been throughout most of the regular season. And so it worked towards their benefit. They were able to get that big lead. Sure, the Charlotte team was able to come back on them, but they've taken it up to that next level. And they certainly have been improved.
Seven turnovers worth. That's how much they've improved, because they're right. Taking care of the ball, and they know how important it is. You're right. This is a veteran basketball team. They know how to win. And a lot of times I think people write them off. They forget. This is a team who's won two championships in a row. And these are guys who know how to win. And they've demonstrated it thus far. And I honestly thought they were going to lose game two.
Well, I still have them losing game three. Like I said, I think they've been lucky at this point. I think when they go to Charlotte, the Bobcats home crowd will be so energized. I think it'll give the team there the extra boost that they've needed. It was too tight in game two. Charlotte had it there for the taking. They probably could have come back in the first game as well. So I think now when they shift back to the city of Charlotte, I think they'll be able to snatch a game away from Miami at that point. And then that's when that veteran leadership will kick into place for Miami, and they'll just close out the series in the remaining two games. At least that's the way I've always seen it.
Yeah, five games, I thought. I think I said four, right?
Right, exactly.
I think I'll probably stick with four, and this is why I think so. I think Jefferson is going to have a tough time because it doesn't get any better. It only gets worse, and apparently it's tearing even worse, his issue with his foot. And if they don't have Jefferson, they don't have a shot.
Well, you're right, but I mean, he was just solid enough in game two, and they really got some unexpected contributions. In game one, it was Gary Neal. In game two, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who's primarily a defensive player. He had 20 points. I mean, that's pretty huge. And Kemba Walker was explosive as always. He showed that kind of burst that maybe he hasn't shown regularly since back in the UConn days. So, I mean, he's a great player. So I think that was a big showing for them. And who knows, maybe with that crowd behind them, they'll get some additional contributions from, say, Henderson, Luke Ridnour. Who knows, off their bench, somebody could always come up and have a big game, and it might be just enough to knock off Miami for a game.
Yeah, Gary Neal might get large again if he can stay out of trouble. It could happen. Now I'm going to make a prediction about game three, though.
All right, go for it.
Look for Udonis Haslem to take care of business in game three. Old school Pat Riley style.
Similar to what he did to Tyler Hansborough a couple years ago. Huh? You want him to go headhunting out there and knock off McRoberts?
And I don't want to see them headhunt. Exactly. But what I'm going to say is Udonis is going to take care of business. He's the elder statesman on that basketball team. And he's going to handle that business out there when they match up again the next night they play. You can trust me on this.
Well, I'll piggyback on your prediction, and I'll say McRoberts probably won't leave the three-point area. I don't think he's coming into the painted area anytime soon, especially with Udonis in there, because if he goes in there for a layup, he's going to go out there with something a lot worse than that.
I think you're right. We'll have to wait and see, because McRoberts, he is a tough kid, I mean, but I don't want to mess with Udonis. I don't care who you are, and that's a kid. That's a guy who's going to take care of business. There's no question. So you're thinking game three, loss.
That's what I think. I think, it's been so close, four-point game, game two. Maybe that extra boost from the crowd will be just enough.
I'm going to say the Miami Heat are going to win by 15 in game three. They're going to blow them out. And I'm not even a Heat fan. I'll tell you what, it's been a great time again, David. Thank you so much for being on the show, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
All right, that was David Ramil. You can find him over at hothoothoops.com. Coming up next, J.R. Wilco and I will talk San Antonio Spurs, Dallas Mavericks playoff hoops. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock. Online community and EDM-based radio.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com. Or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Read what happens when an Orange County housewife decides she likes another man more than her husband. Join Brooklyn through her struggles in this coming-of-age saga filled with full-blown drama and real-life secrets that are no longer kept. Two great novels, one great author. You can find Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles at BrendaPerlin.com. That's www.BrendaPerlin.com. Great books and interviews with the authors that write them are featured on the Writer Showcase podcast. I invite you to check it out at thewritershow.wordpress.com. Fantasy Baseball Weekly is a weekly baseball podcast with a fantasy owner in mind. We give you tips, tricks, tools, and everything else we can think of to help you win your league. You can catch us at fantasybaseballweekly.wordpress.com or on philnasons.com. Come check us out.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The San Antonio Spurs have found themselves in the position of being 1-1 in the playoffs. And joining me to talk all about that and more, please welcome from PoundingTheRock.com, their editor, J.R. Wilco, is in the house. J.R., how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Fantastic. Good. Happy anniversary to you, my friend.
Thank you very much.
We have to give that props up.
Absolutely. 11 awesome years.
11 years. That's a good number. 11. That's a great
number.
Yeah,
it is.
Better than 10.
Agreed.
Longevity is a very beautiful thing, my friend. Very beautiful thing.
I'm very, very grateful to my wife for all she does and let me run the site and take away time from the family to talk to you and folks like you. So this is awesome.
Yeah, plus she's an amazing artist, people. If you ever have the opportunity, please, 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 head on over to Pounding the Rock to scroll down the front page, and you will see a section with her artwork. And you should check it out. It's really good, man. Really good. She's very good at this.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And we're actually putting together her website, michaeldye.com. And that's michaeldye.com. And things are being added to that all the time. And in a couple of weeks here, we'll have it all finished and ready to go.
That's awesome.
A lot of work on that. Yeah.
And we'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes where you can go over and check it out. Because I'll tell you what, it's a lot better than watching game two with the Spurs, right?
Ooh, that was not a whole lot of fun. That was not a lot of fun. The nice thing about it, though, the only nice thing about it is that it's over. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of analysis you can do to point to anything that the Spurs could be really upset about. It's not like they didn't outshoot the Mavs. They did from the field. It's not like they didn't outshoot the Mavs from three. They did. It's not like they didn't get more free throws than the Mavs, because they did that too. They just turned the ball over a whole lot, and the Mavs they held serve. They did a great job of converting those additional possessions into points. So, I mean, as long as you can limit those turnovers, then you're doing fine. And Fred Silva did a post earlier today specifically about those turnovers. He went back and watched all of the turnovers. Thanks to Synergy, MySynergySports.com, for the great work that they do, making that easy to go back and review the film on that stuff. We call it film, even though it's video, or it's not even video anymore anyway. It's the recording. It's the visual recordings of it. But anyway, I went back and watched every single turnover multiple times, and it was really just like a team-wide case of the sloppies, really. There were a few that Dallas forced, but more than anything, the Spurs were trying to force things that weren't there, and they can just clean that up. I mean, obviously they can outshoot, and generally they can outdefend Dallas. I mean, you take away those points off of turnovers, and the Spurs win by like 11 points. Hey, there's that 11, same 11 we were talking about before.
The magic number. I've referred to that as uncharacteristically sloppy from the Spurs.
Yeah,
they turned the ball over a lot.
I wonder if there's anybody out there who's amazing at stats, or anyone who has connections to Elias. But I wonder if there's ever been a playoff game where a team has shot better from the floor and from three, and won by and lost by more than 20 points before in playoff history. But anybody happen to know that, please chime in, because I'm very curious.
I would be curious too. But, yeah, they were a little sloppy, but it's been a closer series than you had thought, I guess. The first game was, what, 5-point differential? What was it, 95-90? So
yes.
It's been a good series.
It has. Both of the games have been, well, the first game was exciting. The second game, I guess, Ginobili hit a three more than halfway through the third quarter to pull it within eight. So it was single digits. You know, a significant portion of the game, and then, you know, just all the rest of those turnovers just caught up to them. I mean, they made it back within five at the end of the second quarter when they went on a 12-2 or a 13-3 run, where Ginobili scored like 10 of the 12 points, and Duncan had a layup in between those. But I mean, they got within five, and then they just went right back to the same old thing. It was just. Just a really, really weird, nasty game that you just don't want to think about anymore. And honestly, if our initial analysis on Pounding the Rock was pointing to, you know, the Spurs really needing to shape up some things that they had done wrong in the first game and didn't correct for the second game, man, I don't think I would be sounding as blasé as I might right now. But honestly, the Mavs have some talents. They have some things that they can really do to hurt you. But honestly, defense is not one of them. They're a very talented offensive ball club. And they did what talented offensive clubs do when you give them extra possession after extra possession. That is, they scored the ball. But it doesn't look like they generated those additional possessions in any kind of a way that Spurs fans, I think, would need to be concerned about.
Perhaps not, but I think those of us who watch basketball more than just one team, I kind of thought that Dallas would win a game, maybe two even. And I wasn't trying to be a flip or troll the Spurs fans, but when you play a team, my experience, you know, from tennis too, is you got to put these kind of teams away because, as I said last week with you, both off air and on air, that's a dangerous little team there. Monte Ellis had a nice ball game in game two, and Sean Marion did too. That funny shot, man. Jeez.
It's so weird. I got to see it in person before game one, and it just, I mean, it really looks about as, it just looks like it's been put together from several different humans, you know? And then, there doesn't look to be anything NBA-esque about that shot, and yet he makes it, you know? What can you, I mean, it's a testimony to his athleticism, and it's really just, it speaks loads about just how talented he is to be able to make a career out of shooting that shot more than once or twice a game. I mean, he makes it work.
His shot isn't even AAU-esque.
No, it's not.
It's just, ugh. But it goes in. I mean, it's weird. If you saw him shooting in a gym and you were going to play pickup basketball, and you didn't know who he was, and that's all you saw him do was shoot, would you pick him up?
Well, if it's in a gym, you don't always get to choose. If it's in a gym, I will tell you, I would probably wait to see how many of them went in because he makes a really high percentage of those in warmups. I generally spend most of my time before the games, when I do go to the games, watching the Spurs. But I just happened to see him over there, and there was no one warming up for the Spurs. And so I ran over there real fast just to watch him. And he just makes a seriously large amount of his warm-up shots with that shot. And, so I don't know. I mean, he's a really long, tall dude, so maybe I would pick him up just for defense. But from watching him warm up, he makes his case, man. He does.
Oh, he does. He's a great athlete, too, man. When he was in college, like I said, he was amazing. The things he could do, the things he still can do.
Yes.
And it's incredible testament to his endurance, his ability to train, you know, like Tim Duncan. Look at Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan is 38. People still troll this guy, and I can't figure out why.
He's about to be 39 years old. I'm sorry. No, he's about to be or did he even turn 38? I didn't miss it, did I?
Oh, no. I'm not up on their birthdays.
37, okay. Just about to be 38. Sorry, I almost added an extra year on there. It's almost to the point where it doesn't matter. I mean, 37, 38, 39, I mean, yeah, there's a difference. But at that age, there's just no way you should be putting up, what was it, 27 points that he did in the first game? But he does. So it's crazy. It's crazy impressive, without a doubt.
Well, I'm part of a Facebook group. They're a lot of fun. I'm mostly Atlanta Hawks fans and Atlanta Braves fans, and someone posted up his picture after he went, what was it, 27-17 or something in game one. And they said, how in the world does this guy do this? And why in the world aren't more people talking about how great this dude is? Because you don't see guys his age excelling the way that he does.
No, you know, you don't. Apparently you have to. You have to score 40 plus points in the first two games before people really start jumping up and down about you. But I don't know. You know, media types, they like to have their narratives. I'm the same way. And if you don't have a narrative, then you write about the thing that jumps out at you that you can turn into a story. It's the easy way to do it. But speaking of stories, you emailed me that you wanted to talk about something that I said, oh, come on, about. But let's talk about it. Let's do it.
All right. You know what? Phil Jackson, he's not my favorite person. But it never has been, you know. He turned me off to the Lakers. I think you know the story. Everyone who listens to the show on a daily basis does. But this is what he had to say. Tim Duncan making the salary he's making after being part of a dynasty, not a dynasty. I wouldn't call San Antonio a dynasty, a force, a great force. They haven't been able to win consecutive championships, but they've always been there. San Antonio has had a wonderful run through Tim's tenure there as a player. He's agreed to take a salary cut so others can play with him so they can be this good. And that's the beginning of team play. Man, he needs to go shut up somewhere, really.
He needs to go shut up somewhere. Well, here's what I think is interesting is the fact that you talk about people loving to troll Duncan and the Spurs. This is not the first time that he's trolled them. Remember the 99 championship was their first, and of course that came in the lockout shortened season, which Jackson then immediately jumps in and says that it's an asterisk, right? Because, you know, it was in that lockout shortened season, like it meant something less, and it wasn't a real one that you could count, that they deserved an asterisk next to that one. And that was one that I think that stuck under, you know, just kind of a burr under the saddle for Spurs fans for quite a while. And I know I was kind of upset about it for a bit. And then a Lakers friend of mine told me, you know, he actually mentioned the Spurs. And I'm like, yeah, he mentioned them to bust on them. I mean, which is the way that I received it. And he goes, no, you don't get Phil. That's the way he compliments. He's like, when he wants to say something nice, the fact that he mentions someone at all, whether it's in a good way or a bad way, that's notable. That means that Phil Jackson is actually thinking about you. That's a compliment. That's the way he compliments is to bust on people. And I'm like, it doesn't feel like a compliment. He's like, believe me, that's Phil Jackson. So he's not your favorite human being. He's not anybody that I follow all the time. But a lifelong Lakers fan to be able to offer that kind of perspective is pretty cool. Pretty cool to be able to go, okay, well, just the fact that he's saying anything. So as soon as he goes off again, I mean, like as soon as he's back in the headlines, as soon as he's got a team again, as soon as anybody cares what he has to say, you know, outside of here's that guy that used to be something, right? He's got a job in the NBA. Now he's the, you know, president, czar, you know, tyrant, despot, whatever he is. For the Knicks now, one of the first things he does is bust on the Spurs, which means that it's a compliment.
I think he's an effing tool, but that's my prerogative. Anyway, well, I think it's funny that he brings them up, and it's fair enough. Those backhanded compliments, it's I guess it is what it is. But you know, it would help if he were in the same position as, I don't know, Greg Popovich, and perhaps wound up in the lottery and actually selected someone who turned out to be probably one of the, will be one of the top 10 players in NBA history, as opposed to jumping onto a team that already had them in place. And I think he needs to go and chill. That's what I think. Save your backhanded compliments, Mr. Jackson. They are not appreciated by me. Thank you.
Wow. Boy, that's harsh. Well, you know, you make a point, which is he never really had to build anything. He always had multiple superstars to ride to his championships. Now, I still say that that's an impressive feat, because there were guys who had those superstars before him that did not do anything with them. The year before he showed up in L.A., the Spurs swept the Lakers right out of the final with the same core that they had that he took to the three-peat. So, I mean, it's impressive what Jackson has done, but it's not the same thing at all. But then again, you know, you're talking entirely different team, entirely different kinds of players. And, you know, you could even make the argument it's an entirely different league at this point.
Yep, you sure can. Good stuff today, JR. Thanks a lot. Good luck on Saturday. We'll speak to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Always enjoy it.
All right, that was JR Wilco. You can find him over at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, I'm hoping that we'll be talking about the Memphis Grizzlies being 2-1 because J.A. Sherman is up next. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
You are a meathead, dead from the neck up.
After these brief messages.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24-7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannbernal.com. That's www.maryannbernal.com. Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmedor.com. That's authorkmedor.com.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock, your online community and EDM-based radio.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m., special programming on the weekends, and in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Shut up! Shut up!
Yes! Shut up!
Shut up! You're telling me to shut up?
Please, just shut up. I am so sick of hearing you talking, talking, talking all the time. Don't you ever just shut up?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Oklahoma City Thunder Memphis Grizzlies series, game 3 just finished. Memphis came out in overtime. Boy, it was a tough game, great series. And joining me to talk all about that and more, please welcome from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, J.A. Sherman is in the house. J.A., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. It's good to be here, although I have to admit I'm a little morose after the Thunder have now dropped 2 overtime games in a row, and they now trail in this series 2-1.
Yeah, well, I've been on the Memphis bandwagon for a long time, so I thought it would be a lot closer than a lot of other people thought. And I'm not going to gloat, at all because it was a tough game. It was a great game. I was glad that I had the opportunity to watch it live. The fourth quarter was definitely crazy. I mean, let's face it. That game should have been over at the end of the third quarter, and Memphis couldn't put the ball in the cup, and the Thunder kept sneaking back.
Yeah, and that's really sort of the defining trait, not only of this game and this series, but also pretty much every time these two teams play. It's really difficult for either one of them to get any sort of win that builds up to double-digit points because they're so close in terms of how they play the game. Even though they have very different ways of going about it, the contrast is so stark that each team is able to figure out a way to keep it close in the end. And so we shouldn't be surprised the Thunder made that big run in the end. I think they were down 17 in the fourth quarter, if I'm looking at my numbers correctly. More problematic, though, is that first half and the third quarter, which put them in such a big hole. And it's nice to see that they actually figured out that they can do some things defensively against the Grizzlies again. But it doesn't erase the fact that those first three quarters were pretty abysmal.
They were tough, I'll tell you that. Memphis played Memphis ball. They took the air out of the ball. They controlled the tempo, and they had the Thunder rattled. And they've had the Thunder rattled throughout this series, really, except for perhaps game one. You know, that was, what, 186? The key is, for me, is to keep the Thunder under 100. If you can keep the Thunder under 100, you've got a good chance to beat them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But I think, obviously, the big contrast between game one and then games two and three is that the Thunder got off to such a great start in the first quarter of that game. They were figuring out ways to score easy buckets. And their transition game has really evaporated, which isn't that surprising. It is playoff ball, and it is the Grizzlies. They're a good offensive rebounding team. They grabbed 13 offensive boards tonight. You might appreciate this. These Grizzly teams for the past couple years, they do remind me a little bit of those Detroit Piston teams back in 87, 88, 89, 90, when they figured out how to slow down Michael Jordan. You know, those great defensive Piston teams, they just figured out how to make him go where he didn't want to go, to take shots he didn't really want to take. And if you look at Kevin Durant's stats in this game, he was 0 for 8 from 3-point range. He shot 10 for 27 overall. He did get 30 points, but 30 points off of 27 shots. That's not his optimal game. That's not the best way for Kevin Durant to play. And so he's taking a lot of shots that are forced, that are contested. And of course, the Grizzlies are forcing him into difficult situations. But by and large, I really don't like the lack of patience that the Thunder offense has shown over these last two games. And I think it's really hindering them. Really, it was game one was the last time Kevin Durant shot over 50%. Then he shot 12 for 28, now 10 for 27. If my numbers add up right, he's now 8 for 27 from 3-point range. That's not a good way to battle against this Grizzlies team.
Nope, I like the bad boy reference. In fact, on Monday's show, I discussed with Kevin Life and Tom Lewis. I said if the Indiana Pacers and the Memphis Grizzlies want to advance in these series, they got to play like the bad boys. And they're starting to. Maybe not Indiana, but we'll talk about them on Monday. But Memphis is putting a body on people. They're taking the ball. They took the air out of the ball. They've done everything they could to win. They've cut down their turnovers to keep Oklahoma City out of transition. And it was a great thing. But when you say they being the Oklahoma City Thunder, are rushing their shots, you can only look at one person for that, and that's Russell Westbrook, right?
Well, I don't know. I think it's the entire team, honestly. I think Westbrook has not done a good job in setting the right kind of tempo for this series. I know that the Thunder want to play fast. They want to be in transition. But you know what? It's not going to happen, not against this Grizzlies team. And so they have to value possessions much better than they have been. He shot 9 for 26, which is I mean, pretty much the same as Kevin Durant's 10 for 27. Russell Westbrook, he finished 4 for 13 from three-point range. That's insane. It's far from his best shot. And so you have to ask, why are Westbrook and Durant taking a combined 21 three-point shots in one game? That should be a team number, not two guys, unless, you know, for some random reason they both get hot. But their willingness to settle for those kinds of shot attempts is really messing up the Thunder's opportunity to do some things inside of the free throw line. And also it leads to those long run out rebounds. It leads to the Grizzlies transition game. Granted, they're not always going to be great finishers the way the Thunder are, but it gives them opportunity to score. And it's really problematic. The Thunder shot under 40% for this game. I think they shot under 40% from the last game too. And that's not going to be good enough. Even though their defense has played well enough, I would say over the past two games, the offense has not shared their amount of the burden.
No, they sure haven't. Yeah, you know what the whole thing is this is their offense. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook taking turns shooting. And that's what it's been like, at least to me, all season. And when they fall, everything looks great. But then you get a game like Game 3 where they didn't fall. But it was ridiculous watching these guys launch one three after another, one dribble, no pass, nothing. Boom, boom, clank, clank. And that's not the Thunder that we saw during the season, though. They were guys who came down the floor, set up a little bit, and then scored, right?
Yeah, and I think on that point, you really have to look at the Thunder bench, who have really underperformed these last two games. In the previous game, they produced 14 points. The bench did. That total was matched by Beno Udrih, the backup point guard, who wasn't even expected to get playing time in this series before I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce his name well.
Nick Calates.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, until he was suspended. Beno Udrih was not supposed to get any time at all. And yet here he is. He scored 14 the last game. He scored 12 in this game, shooting a very high percentage. And he, again, he outplayed the bench by himself. The Thunder bench scored 9 points. And then you add on Tony Allen, who actually had a very good offensive first half. He finished with 16 points. So between those two, you got 28 points off of the Memphis Grizzlies bench, a bench who many thought was not going to be up to the task in this series, has really been the storyline that has gone underneath the radar, that has been the deciding factor. If you look at the starters for the Grizzlies, I would say the Thunder have done a pretty good job against them. Conley did have a pretty strong game, but he's probably their best player. That's performing right now. Gasol has not had a breakout game. Randolph did not have a good game. And so it's been the bench that's made the big difference in the last two games that have been decided by one possession this game and two possessions the last game. And then we look at the Thunder bench, and I'm gonna avoid being a broken record. I'm not going to bring up the fact that Steven Adams and Jeremy Lamb did not play. Well, I brought them up, but I'm not going to go into it. But you got to look at Reggie Jackson, shot 2 for 9 this game for 4 points. Last game, he didn't make a single basket, scored 2 points. Nick Collison only got one shot attempt. And Derek Fisher, I mean, he's doing as well as he can, but he's not going to get open looks if the rest of the Thunder guys aren't making shots. And so that's, you know, 9 points for a Thunder bench that should be outperforming the Grizzlies bench, and it's not happening, and that's a huge difference in why one team is winning the series now.
This is the bench we thought they would be in the summer, or at least I did. And it's not, but here's the thing. This isn't the bench that was. And again, we go, let's get the elephant out of the room. Scott Brooks doesn't want to play Jeremy Lamb. He doesn't want to play Steven Adams. And those two guys carried the weight for them for a little bit this season. Lamb played really well this season off the bench. Steven Adams was a nice little addition and nice force. And it's now like they've been exiled in Scott Brooks's bench chamber, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Steven Adams definitely on the court. I think he adds energy to the second unit that would be lacking otherwise. But I can't fault Scott Brooks too much because I do think the Thunder interior is doing a good enough job to win games. Zach Randolph, he had a strong second game. This game, he shot 5 for 20, finished with 16 points. That's a good defensive performance. Marc Gasol finished 7 for 14, but a lot of his shots came outside of the lane. I think that's a good performance. They did produce 62 of their points in the paint, but a lot of that is offensive rebounding. It's guards slashing into the lane, Tony Allen finishing at the rim. And so I really don't have a lot of issue with Adams not playing, although I'd like to see him. But all right, now you did it. You duped me into it, Phil. I got to talk about Jeremy Lamb.
Please do.
We didn't know what to expect coming into this season. But when Westbrook missed a number of games, Jeremy Lamb became part of a really dynamic second unit that was exciting. They were fun to watch, and they produced points. And oftentimes the Thunder would use that stretch in the second quarter with their bench unit to either take the other team out of the game or to catch up from deficits. And with Lamb playing in that role, it really took a lot of pressure off of Reggie Jackson, who was forced into the starter's role because of Westbrook's injury. And since he was no longer part of the second unit, that left the point guard duty up to Derek Fisher, who's not really a point guard anymore. He's more of a shooting guard. And so Jeremy Lamb took a lot of the pressure off him, handling the ball, helping to set up the offense, working really well in the pick and roll game. And even though he hit a shooting slump at the beginning of the year, right around the All-Star game, I still liked what he was bringing to the court because he was making that offense so much more dynamic in terms of what he could do on the court, just way more dynamic than Derek Fisher could ever do. And then the Thunder brought in Caron Butler. And while I still like the signing, he's pretty much a one-dimensional player at this point in his career. He's got a step-back jumper, and he's got a three-point shot. He can't do anything off the dribble, really. He can't get dribble-drive penetration. He doesn't really run the pick-and-roll that well. And so you took one young guy who is a multi-dimensional offensive player, and you sidelined him for a guy who does one thing relatively well, a little bit better than league average. And the result is what we have now is that we've got a second unit that's led by Jackson. And if Jackson is not producing offense, there's nobody else who can create a shot now that Lamb is on the bench. And I think it really took the teeth out of a second unit that should have been benefiting the team now. And I think that's the biggest gripe that I have with Scott Brooks this past season is that he took a developing situation, an improving situation with the Thunder bench, and he intentionally sidelined it in exchange for more veteran leadership. And I think we're starting to see some of the many consequences at all. We could say that we predicted it. We're seeing the consequences of that decision now, and the Thunder bench is not performing anywhere close to where it needs to be in order for the Thunder to win this series.
No, they sure aren't. Caron Butler blew the dynamic of the bench, not intentionally, of course, but it was Scott Brooks. Anyway, great stuff. We'll look forward to the rest of the series, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's game four is going to be a pivotal game. The Thunder have to decide how they're going to compete. We saw them compete finally in the fourth quarter in this game where they were actually trying to take the pressure to the Grizzlies, and it worked. But we're not seeing that in the first half. They're way too passive and really, in my opinion, too lazy on offense. They're not working hard enough on offense, and they're getting themselves into a hole against a Detroit Pistons of the 80s type of team that just knows how to bleed out the clock and produce points when they need to. And that's the difference in the series so far.
All right. Great stuff. That was J.A. Sherman. You can find him at welcometoloudcity.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. Monday, we're going to talk more NBA hoops. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen. My mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.